Okay, I told some people the subtitle of this was 40 Years in 20 Minutes. I started working on this a long time ago, and as a graduate student, the project was funded by the Corps of Engineers, and the objective was not marsh creation and restoration, but to stabilize dredge material. I don't think the restoration and creation terms had come into regular use at that point in time. So today what I'm going to do is, over that long period of time, pick out some of the things that illustrate the effect of today's theme of hydrology, vegetation, and soils, and how each one of those things are really important in tidal marshes. So the ecosystem services, most of you are wetland people and you go through this list, but one of the unique things about tidal marshes is the exchange with the estuary. So it was pretty obvious early in the regulatory period that destruction of marshes was not a good thing as far as the health of the estuary, the productivity of the estuary. So it provides food and habitat, and also upland wildlife utilize the marsh. It helps to maintain water quality by filtering sediments, which is pretty obvious. Marshes build from the sediments that come in with tide water. And the water quality of removing nitrogen and phosphorus, storage of flood water, carbon storage, the shoreline stabilization function is important in a lot of ways. And also socioeconomic benefits like recreation, aesthetics, production of seafood, those kind of things. So marshes were not protected until about the time the Clean Water Act was passed in the early 30s. And it's always estimated about half the tidal wetlands in the United States have been altered, destroyed over the years. So as a result of these losses and these recognized values, then there was a move to protect and also create and restore some of those that had been lost, and particularly the functions that had been lost. So I'm going to focus on two types of marsh, the main ones along the coast of North Carolina, the regularly flooded Spartina alterniflora marshes, which occur all in, up and down the east coast of the United States. And maybe even more acreage in North Carolina is brackish water marsh, which is irregularly flooded. Because the tide is more controlled by wind direction and speed than lunar tide cycle in these areas. So they're fresher water, and they have more species diversity. A lot of it's dominated by Juncus ramirianus. You have Spartina patens, Distichus spicata. There's a wide variety of plants, and some are dominated by Spartina sinus roides. So over the years, this initial thing with dredge soil stabilization evolved from one stage to another of creating marsh using the dredge material, where we purposely, for a while, placed dredge material to actually create habitat. Then shoreline erosion control, which today is called living shorelines, and the compensatory mitigation, which came after that. So I have a series of slides here to demonstrate each one of these phases. So this is the dredge material stabilization, and here's a soil effect, physical properties to begin with. Fortunately, most, well, for us that we're doing the planting, most of the marshes in North Carolina are sand-based, but towards the southern coast down around the Cape Fear area, we have the silt and clay accumulations, and the planning is a little more laborious. And I always like to point out this student here on your left who was working for the summer with us. He's now a cardiologist. So you learn a lot of things when you work like that. So he's probably got I hope he's cleaner when he does that. But. So here's a dredge material island. So the Corps of Engineers maintains channels, and about literally 99.9% of the material there is sand size particles. So it's just a big pile of sand, and the objective was to stabilize the edges to cut down on the sand that washed back into the channel. So we could do mechanical planting there. Was basically a vegetable or tobacco transplanter. And the upper zone there is Spartina Peyton's. And then the upland we had to stabilize with American beech grass to keep sand from blowing on the site. So the zonation of plant species is one of the characteristics of tidal marshes. You usually get sharp breaks depending on the tidal range at the site, the tide range in particular. So there we have the Spartina Peyton's, which is in the what we usually call the storm zone. It doesn't get flooded that frequently, and the Spartina alternal flora is in the intertidal zone from about mean high water to mean sea level. So and you have to plan ahead for that. You have to get a reference marsh and determine what the elevation breaks are. That's the lower edge there. And there's another soil factor, or at least nutrient factor, illustrated at that site pretty early on. This is only 2 years growth after at the end of the second growing season. And that's unusually productive Spartina alternal forest, big. And it turns out what the big effect was nitrogen and phosphorus leaching from the upland there where birds, terns, and gulls used for nesting and produced a lot of guano. So the next illustration also has to do with plant nutrients, which was a shoreline erosion control attempt in the Neuse River. So on your left there is the bulkhead that's along part of the shoreline. And we were going to try to stabilize that with marsh vegetation. It's pretty severe. Shoreline is very narrow tidal range, so you don't have a very wide area to work with. And the second problem is it's rapidly eroding. And what we wound up planting on is actually the B horizon of a typical coastal plain soil, which is almost devoid of phosphorus and has the, or at least plant available phosphorus. And we put in this fertilizer experiment, and really all you need to see there is the difference between the fertilized and unfertilized. This is the unfertilized row, and the others have various combinations of nitrogen and phosphorus, which was ammonium sulfate and triple superphosphate just in the trench when it was planted. And these soil test results show you what the problem was there. There's almost no plant available P. So and we'll contrast that with this shoreline, which, again, we were planning to stabilize this area, which was eroding after they put in the bulkhead. This was originally marsh. And at that point in time, it was still permissible to dredge and fill. So there's a housing development back there. So they wanted to have a sandy beach, so they covered up the marsh. So this is really a restoration. And so this is 3 years after the planting. Did a good job of stabilizing the shoreline. And, of course, there were no nutrients applied here. It was just planted And and the soil test will show you why. On the same scale that we had the two on the other shoreline, this milligrams per cubic decimeter of P, and this is in the 500 range, both the natural control and the planted bars there. So there's excessive amount of nutrients from seepage, from septic tanks and lawn fertilization and all those kinds of things. So it's real nice for growing marsh. Then the marsh creation for mitigation. This is one site. Again, this was a pile of old dredge material that was converted to a Spartina alternifora regularly flooded marsh, and that was to compensate for some damage that the state port in their expansion did to another wetland. So that's was the objective there. And a mitigation project that brought up some other problems was in cooperation with the phosphate mine that's in eastern North Carolina. So these are the heads of creeks, and it has the irregularly flooded mixed vegetation marsh, mostly dominated by Juncus ramirianus there. But what they want to convince the permitting agencies that they could mine up to this railroad and just go through these and then put a similar system back. So we worked on that, and they graded an area with some specifications from upland between these two natural creeks and put in a drainage system. And they had to remove about 9 feet of soil material to get down to the correct elevation to support the plants there. That's one thing about tattle marshes. You figure out what the hydrology is, because most of the hydrology, of course, is determined by the tide. So you got to figure out the lower and upper limits of each of the vegetation zones. So when it's very narrow tattle range like this, it's difficult to grade precisely. You only have about a foot between the upper part of the marsh and the cutoff at the bottom. So here was the general area was planted, we had Spartina alternifora along the creek banks and Spartina sinusroides over most of the other area, and Peyton's at the top. And we ran into a problem we hadn't seen before. It was great growth here, except there were spots like this that were dead. So that turned out to be the problem. And we put in a little lime experiment. We had a pH of 2.4 or so on where the lime was under play, and it took 8 tons per acre rate to get it up to 4. So that turned out to be that some sulfides were uncovered in the grading, of course, and they oxidized and drove the pH down. We did find out that if you're above 3, you can still grow marsh vegetation. But the other thing you have in that situation, they were relatively small portions of the area, and what really solved the pH problem was the tide flushing. Got sort of stabilized that, raised the pH, and we're pretty successful there in getting a marsh completed. And some more recent things. This is a restoration of a farm called North River Farms in eastern North Carolina, and a lot of groups have worked there. So the group that I worked with had a small role, but there's several hundred acres restored. It was led by the Coastal Federation, which is a private organization that deals with restoration. They obtained the land and got the project underway. But the part that I was involved with was the Tattle Creek here. And that's about 35 acres of creek and vegetation that was restored there. The whole area that the NC State group worked with was about 111 acres, and we had about 35 there for the tidal marsh. Again, this is a microtidal kind of site, and from the lower marsh, from the lower cutoff, is about 0.5 feet up to about 2 feet. So you got a foot and a half of elevation to work with that can be planted. So again, the hydrology depends on the tide range and the elevation and slope of the area. And this is just some pictures. This was the first probably a few months after it was planted, and this is the end of the second growing season, and this just shows the range of tide there. The wind direction makes the biggest difference, the wind direction and speed. So you still have tide to deal with, but there are times that it might be 2 weeks or a month that some parts are not flooded, and you can work there in those times. So you can tell I'm interested in plant nutrients, because that's some of the things that other people didn't look at. It depends on where you are, whether you need to have any nutrients added. It's always nitrogen and phosphorus. That simplifies it, because the salt water furnishes about everything else. So there was a particular area at that site that remained unvegetated about 3 years after it was planted. So it gave me an opportunity to install this field experiment with fertilizer. It's a randomized complete block design. There are three blocks or replications. It's a complete factorial between three N rates, two phosphorus rates, and two plant species. The plots are 4 by 8 meters, and it was planted in 2009. So this was one of the areas that were bare. They were relatively high in the elevation zone there. And what I wanted to do was to plant a combination of Spartina patens, which is what you see mostly there, and Juncus ramarinus. So looking across the plots, and the plots run this way, and I think the next picture will show you the end of the second growing season, and you're looking down the plot here. This is a row of Juncus ramarinus. This is Spartina patens, and so there were alternate rows. So I was going to look at the effect of the N and P rates on the on which species became dominant. And really, you can look at the conclusion right here. The advisor I had from my PhD program, he said, this kind of work, if you can't see it in the field, there's no need to do in statistics. So right here we have a no fertilizer control, and this was after three growing seasons, and this is one that received 56 kilograms per hectare of N and 50 kilograms per hectare of P. So I do have a little bit of data here. This was harvested in 2014. So the statistics showed there was a three-way interaction between the N and P and plant P species. So what we have here is the 0 kilograms per hectare of P, so no phosphorus, and these are the N rates. So it's pretty obvious what happens. There's no effect of nitrogen if you don't correct the phosphorus deficiency. And the big difference between the species here going from with P, going from 0 to 112 kilograms per hectare N, then the Spartina patens, which is a grass, a C4 plant, is responds really well to the nitrogen, you see, up to about 1,600 grams per square meter, and the Juncus doesn't respond at all. And, well, I say it doesn't respond. I think part of the effect here is competition, which is what I wanted to look at anyway. It just outgrew the junkus, which is a rush. So finally, in summary, some of the key things that you have to do with salt marshes is first the hydrology. You have to get the tide range right, plant the correct species in the correct zone it's adapted to. And in coastal locations near the coast, there's a lot of erosion, things moving around, so you don't want to pick a site that's going to be gone next year. And the particular plant species that are adapted to the salinity. And this, which I talked about mostly, is the plant nutrients. And again, there are many regions of the country, particularly if you have these fine materials accumulated, you're never going to need to add any nutrients. And as was emphasized earlier, you want to have locally adapted plants, and you know, don't be bringing things in. And finally, in a tidal area, the initial planting sometimes needs some maintenance, clearing off the material that might be deposited by just racks of material that the tide often deposits during storms, to remove that. Replanting in these places that are in high energy areas, and finally in some of the fresher water areas or brackish water areas, you have Phragmites as a plant that you want to control.
Do you have one question? No questions? I have a question. I assume, maybe I'm wrong, that in these tidal marsh systems, the limiting factor is nitrogen, not phosphorus. Is
that would be mostly true in saltwater areas.
But not in the brackish system?
Yeah, when you get back, well, like the sites we were working at there, what was happening, you're uncovering B horizons when it was extremely limiting in this last two that I showed. It varies with site. I guess that's one of the messages, that it wouldn't hurt to do a soil test if the only thing you looked at was the phosphorus. It'll tell you whether you need any. Yeah.
So you didn't really look at the soils at all for the restoration. That's what I was hearing. You were mostly worried about the vegetation and the
cycling. No, I was looking. We'd certainly take the soils into consideration, and the part about the soils is whether you need nutrients or not is a part that I was emphasizing. Where I had the observations of where it was necessary to add nitrogen and phosphorus.
You didn't find structure or soil type?
Well, I think that's not much of a factor because of the wetness. The structure and compaction and those kind of things usually don't come into play when things are wet, saturated, or at least periodically saturated.
Thank you very much.